You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey there, I am Captain Dean, and my guest is the lead singer, guitarist of The Rift, Kai Rogers.
What's up?
Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I got tripped up on the W there. I was going to say, welcome to the Sound Atlas, but I said, what's up?
No.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
Very good. We are at Mellow Matt's Music and More.
That we are.
Which I have done most of these podcasts at, and it's a very good place to be.
Well, Matt was telling me a minute ago you guys got some kind of unspoken racket going on where you get people to buy shit while they're waiting on the interview to start.
It seemed to work for you.
For me, I got
I'm setting up, and you've bought some CDs. So if you want to interview here, that's the trick, people.
Yeah.
Bring in business. But not really. Thank you again for meeting me. We have talked back and forth for a little bit, and it's been hard to get together.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get together last week because you all were performing.
Yeah, and I was,
so
I feel
like,
so
oh,
bad.
We got this show, and I was like, well, that's okay. That's kind of important.
No, it's cool. I'm so not used to playing gigs at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That it was just like, oh, yeah, I don't have anything going on that day,
yep.
You know? And then someone's like, hey, we got to load in our equipment at, you know, whatever time on Tuesday. And I was
isn't
like,
that crazy?
Fuck.
Exactly.
Fuck.
I had to play live on the lot, which was, as we're taping this, it was last weekend. And I played drums for Palmer St. Clair. And she was the first act on Saturday at 5 o'clock. In
weird,
the evening, and I'm sitting in Tidballs setting up drums at 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Daytime.
I'm like,
yeah.
I've never seen daylight in this window. And I looked up behind the stage, there's a window with light coming through. And
yep.
I'm like, I didn't know there was a window up there.
Yeah, I know there's a window there, but my experience with the window has been photographers when we're playing gigs like to go outside and they do this cute thing they like to do. Where they take photos from outside.
Yeah,
the
yeah. Well, that's
like,
always cool.
You know, it is cool. But
that's the sticker window.
I've never seen actual light coming through that.
No, window. I haven't either. I think years and years ago when it was the parakeet, I ate there once or twice. And of course, there was daylight.
Yeah, it's just
but,
strange.
But as Tidballs, it's like you don't realize there's light or like sunlight coming in.
It's funny. I was talking to my friend Sarah Schulte, who does local shots.
Yes.
Revolution.
That is Hot Donna.
Yeah, Hot Donna.
You've completely given away
her
Wonder
She's going
to
be so upset with me. But now I was talking to her about that recently, actually. We were at Rocky's. And she was talking about how, man, could you imagine what this place looks like in the daytime? And I almost don't even want to imagine
you
out. It.
Yeah,
like,
you
like
can't
Rockies,
because you're not used
there.
To it. It's
yeah.
totally unusual to see.
Yeah, and it's just so, like, it fits so well for it to be dark in there. Like,
it
imagining
does.
Sunlight in Rockies is kind of like
yeah.
eerie. Like, that
well,
kind of scares me.
I remember Rockies more as Three Brothers, the original Three Brothers.
Oh, they moved over?
Yeah, they moved over. And so what is Rockies now was
yeah.
Three Brothers back in the day. And I don't think it's really changed much. It's pretty much the same as far as
graffiti everywhere.
Yeah, the atmosphere.
My favorite. I love Rockies.
I'm finally booked to play there. I've never played there before.
You never played at Rockies?
Not Rockies. I've
oh,
played
man.
Three Brothers, but not Rockies.
They're It's Rocky's my favorite place.
I think I might have a gig offer for you then because
what would that be?
We'll talk about that when
yeah,
we're
I guess
done.
Under the table, we can talk about this.
Well, I had a show offer given to me. And I'm like, okay, I need another band.
Yeah.
So
we'll
maybe
talk.
The Rift
we'll
will be the other band.
Yeah.
But anyway, we are here today because it is your turn to be featured on the Sound Atlas.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about you and start with where are you from?
I'm from a town called Brookfield, Ohio.
Okay.
Which, hold your applause. Like, I know everybody knows
no,
about
No, I do what I want.
Everybody knows about Brookfield, Ohio. It's a big happening.
Where exactly would that be located?
So it's like this tiny nowhere town. If anyone's heard of Youngstown, Ohio,
yes.
It's Bruce Springsteen has a song about
yep.
it. It's like 20 minutes west of Youngstown, but it's right on the border of Ohio and Pennsylvania.
Okay,
like an hour
so you're
and a half south of Cleveland.
Eastern Ohio.
Yeah, yeah, northeast Ohio, like 8 hours from here. And
okay.
I don't know, man, that town was... I go there every now and then to visit and everything, you know. But I was the music scene in that town, pretty
really?
Much, you know. There was like one or two kids who liked to rap and stuff, but
okay.
they never really took it seriously, and so...
That's interesting. I've always... I guess... Certain bands that come from Ohio are very proud of being from Ohio.
Well, you're thinking of like Black Keys. They're from Akron.
But, you know,
but Akron's like a place.
The Pretenders, and I think, who else is from Ohio?
Oh, man.
Was Firehose from Ohio?
I don't know. Maybe Fire not. Hose. I can, they're all slipping my mind right now. There's a bunch of good bands.
There are a lot of good bands, but I think a lot of them came from Cleveland or Akron, maybe.
Kid Cudi, the rapper, he's from Cleveland. I like his
Cleveland
music a lot,
rocks. Well, so they say.
Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever been there?
I have. I've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 3 times.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it was like passing through.
Yeah, Cleveland is, I mean, I don't live there, and I don't want to be mean to Cleveland and just talk poorly about Ohio, but I never much cared for it being there.
Well, Kentucky is awesome. Kentucky kicks ass, according to the t-shirt. So you moved to the right place.
It's got the devil horns going on.
So you're growing up in Ohio.
Yeah.
You are the music scene of your town.
But pretty much. And that's not like an achievement. I don't want to make it seem like it's this great thing. It was
just a small town.
Very tiny town. Yeah. I call it like the Kentucky of Ohio.
Interesting.
Like this little rural rednecky type community. You know what I mean? Which is great.
They're everywhere.
I love Kentucky.
They have those in California.
Oh, for sure. They've got them. They've clearly got them in Ohio, at least. And so
rednecks are everywhere.
I was
the ye to the hall.
I think I was in like the 5th grade when I first started doing music stuff, and cool. I joined the band when I went to middle school. I was a drummer.
Right.
And when I was like 12 or 13, I got a drum set, and I became a drummer.
Cool.
And I really badly wanted to start a band. Because I could play drums okay. I could keep a beat and stuff after a while,
right.
Practicing and stuff. And I was in marching band and stuff at that point, and I was, you know, playing quads, section leader and stuff. So I was an okay drummer for a teenager, and I really wanted to be in a band. But everybody who played instruments either just didn't care enough to want to do that sort of thing, or they...
Kind of a hobby.
Yeah, they just
weren't. I mean, I've met a ton of people that was like... They had the talent, they had the knack for it, but to them it was like,
yeah.
I like playing guitar, but I like doing this other stuff too, and it was just another thing.
Yeah, no one was really serious about it the way that I was, and no one like put in the time, really. No one wanted to. So I taught myself how to play guitar when I was, I think, 15.
Not bad.
And I took some lessons eventually, mm-hmm. For a little bit, and
just learning basics and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I had this teacher named John Rongo, who was a really awesome teacher. He's a big part of the reason I think I stuck with the instrument. But he would, at first, he would just teach me songs that I wanted to learn.
Okay,
which is it's a technique I use now with my students because it maintains their interest,
right?
And it also helps you kind of develop skills on the instrument where you're starting to understand how it works through the lens of the things that you're already into.
Absolutely.
So that's how I started to figure out stuff I was into. And towards the end of our time together, we just did Beatles songs for like, I think, 3 or 4 months. I would just learn Beatles songs every week.
Not bad.
Which was cool because it was, I mean, the stuff those guys do is actually a lot more complex than it seems. And, you know, while it's not all super complicated, it's when you're first learning an instrument,
mm-hmm.
it helps like setting a foundation for these are different types of things you can do, you know.
And sometimes you can take just one note or one chord out of something you learn that's an actual song and start with that.
Absolutely.
And write your own song.
And that's,
really how a lot of it just kind of, you know, dominoes into the songwriting thing.
I started to get really into like Jay Retard. I don't know if you've ever listened to him. He's this punk rock musician from Memphis,
mm-hmm.
who was just incredibly talented, just these amazing records he made, super prolific. And it helped me realize, like, man, I don't have to be some incredible musician to, you know, to play music. I can just do whatever I can. So I knew how to play guitar. I knew how to play drums. I couldn't sing at all, but I just said, fuck it. And went to this pretty affordable studio, and I recorded this record, 12 songs. Punk album. It sucks really bad. It's no good.
But it was all you.
Yeah, and I think I was 15.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so that was like my first experience with like doing that. And so I got a drummer that played in the drum line with me.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a kid named Alex Schatzel. And we started playing gigs in Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and we actually played one in New York, Buffalo.
Dude, that's a cool upbringing.
We were okay. I mean, I look back on it now. Yeah, it was pretty shitty, but it's
it may have been shitty, but it was the launching point.
Yeah, and it was fun.
Not only prove to yourself that this is something I like, this mm-hmm. is something I want to do, but to get started at such a young age, and I can relate to you on that. you really never lost that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's still there today.
It was formative.
Yeah.
You know, it was a formative experience, and I'm thankful for it. And we had a lot of good times. We played at a bunch of places. It was just a two-piece band, and it was the songs that I had written and ones that I was writing. So,
what was the name of the band?
It was just Kai Rogers. Sometimes we were the Kai Rogers band or whatever. we changed it up for different gigs we played.
Yeah. And what year was this?
Oh man, I don't know. This would have been my junior year through senior year of high school. So I would have been 17, 18, and I'm 21 now.
Okay.
So
not that long ago.
3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's feels
amazing
like
how
ago.
Some people can do so much in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And some people can do what you did in 5 years and it takes them 20.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's
true. It's a true
that,
thing.
But
well,
but
it's,
I mean,
it's the procrastination.
I was trying really hard and I was doing a bunch of different things. And
you had a vision and you made it come to life.
Yeah, more or less. Mm-hmm. And you know, we played like that for a while, and I started doing some gigs by myself. Just like with my guitar and singing and stuff, and
so you weren't
cool.
afraid to test the waters. I mean, to
no,
go into the
not,
studio
man,
by yourself,
yeah,
record an album, put a band together,
yeah.
go out and do a solo like performances. And,
yeah,
I mean, you definitely dove in head first and
for
found
sure.
Who you
and
are.
I before I went into the studio, I had one condenser mic and a Reaper software, so which I'm still evaluating. to this day, but I recorded some demos with that, and that's you know, what I sent to the producer guy before I went in the studio. So I had a little experience with it,
right?
You know, but that was definitely a formative experience, and all those things kind of taught me how those work,
right?
Like what is a scam, what is the way that gigs should be done,
right?
You know, how do you, you know, set things up on stage in a proper way? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with, you know, different situations?
You'd
how do
be
you,
surprised
what should a
how many people
like?
Never even think about it.
Yeah, and it was it helped because I didn't think about that. It was just shit that happened to me as I was.
Yeah, you do learn
15 to 17 years old. I learned all these things, and so some of it was a little dark, but it was a good experience.
Yeah.
And my parents and family were really supportive, which
and
helped a lot.
That says a lot.
Absolutely, you know? It helped quite a bit. And so,
the most successful musicians in life have always had a strong support system.
Yeah.
Because when you're constantly told, you know, talked down to, and I hope it's a phase, and when are you going to give this up and get a real job?
Yeah.
When you hear that kind of shit, it's not very helpful, you know?
Yeah, of
but
course
in
not.
Your case, you had a very good support system.
Yeah, they dealt with my screaming and yelling and my loud ass playing and everything, and they drove me to Pittsburgh to play a gig when I was like 15 years old and stuff like that. So that was
and
nice.
And I've seen
them.
That around here lately with like the band Black Gold, you know, they're younger guys and their families are very supportive.
Dr.
And
Tom is a pretty good example of the literally little
Dr.
kids.
Dr. Tom and
band.
The mini me's.
Yeah.
Tom is a cool dude and he's also a great dad.
Yeah.
I've been to their house.
Yeah, no, he's a nice guy.
Them. Yeah.
He's a nice fella.
I saw him play at
really
the Sinkhole Sanctuary one night.
He played
it
with us one
really
time
good show.
There. A Halloween gig, I think they
yeah, and
for
that's
us.
Where I first saw you.
Yeah.
I was at that show.
Yeah, we were dressed as
kinda,
Kesha.
I kind of hung out in the corner and watched everything. I didn't really talk to anybody. But
that was a fun show, man. Yeah. We were brushing our teeth with bottles of Jack Daniels, dressed as Kesha. And it was really silly. But I love Halloween gigs there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of, that's pretty much, you know, the history
start
of me being up there. And
so what brought you down here?
Well, the whole, I would say, I think I was maybe 11 or 12 when that first Cage the Elephant record came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened to that and I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I had never really heard music like that. You know what I mean? It was just this kind of, it's kind of Red Hot Chili Peppers-esque, but in like a unique way. And so I really started digging them, and they put out the second album, and I was blown away by how different it was.
Right.
You know what I mean? And this was before I knew how to play the guitar. And I went and saw them at a concert in Pittsburgh, and Sleeper Agent opened for them.
Yeah.
And I thought they were great, too.
Yeah.
And I researched a little bit, and I saw that they were all from this same town. And I was like, wow, you know, some cool-ass bands from this Bowling Green place. And then I think I would have been 14. It was actually, and this isn't a sob story, you don't have to feel bad or anything, but it was the day my grandfather died.
Oh. See, you set me up for a joke. No. It's actually serious.
This was years ago, man. It's whatever. He's he's been dead for a while. But I loved him a lot, but he's been dead for years.
I guess.
So Cage the Elephant, on their Facebook page had shared a video of Morning Teleportation.
Yep.
Playing on David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it. And I was completely just blown away. Morning Teleportation to this day is probably my favorite band.
Yeah. And as we're taping this, Tiger just passed away recently, like 2 weeks from now we are. And this is kind of one of the first episodes I've taped since a lot of that's happened with Dylan and Tiger and Billy. And our music scene has taken a hit.
I think music in general has taken a hit because,
Our scene's gone through a lot, but nothing quite like this that I can recall in all of the years that I've been involved here.
No, it's been tragic. And Tiger, when I watched him play guitar as a kid for the first time and listened to that, I didn't know that those sounds could be made from a guitar. It was totally different. And
totally.
So that's what made me really want to learn was just
so
this.
Your biggest influences came from Bowling Green,
basically,
and you weren't even here.
Yeah, it's basically like Tiger Merritt and John Frusciante from Red Hot Chili Peppers when I was growing up were the two biggest guitar people I had.
I get that.
And Tiger was just, I've never seen anyone play like that.
Mm-mm.
And even at this point in my life or, musical career, whatever, I'm classically trained. I've studied jazz in Italy and seen people play who are masters of the instrument, I know everything there is to know and I can make whatever sound I want. And they still can't hold a candle to what Tiger was doing because he played so differently than anyone
else.
Totally
different.
And that's what really spoke to me is that it was just this completely unique style of playing that I'd never heard anything like that. So when it came time for me to go to college, I kind of knew where I wanted to be. I was like, well, if I'm going to be a musician, if I'm going to do all these things, I want to go closer to that fucking guy.
Cool.
I want to go closer to these people who, are inspiring
me. This is a great background. I've never heard anybody from the outside be influenced by the music from here.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of bands, man, that I really enjoyed. I listened to a lot of Schools.
Yeah.
Matulu. Remember Matulu?
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were cool. There's a whole bunch of bands that I really enjoyed from here. And Tiger was really like the crowning jewel of it. It was like, if someone can get that good along with all of these other people, then there's something in the fucking water in Bowling Green.
There really is.
So I decided to come here, and I wasn't certain I was going to stay, but I checked out the college and the music program.
Right.
I met John Martin, who is the guitar professor at WKU, my teacher. I thought he was awesome.
Another brilliant musician that's been a part
dude.
Of this music scene for years.
That guy has helped me in so many ways. Like letting me borrow equipment, not knowing if I'm going to break it or not. And I haven't. I'm always careful with it. I couldn't ask for a better education on my instrument than what that guy gives me. So it worked out really well.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I'm very lucky that all of the stuff that I wanted to have here was here when I got,
I've known John forever, or known of John forever, and I was at a blues jam one night, and Michael Goff asked me to come up and play drums, and it was... I look up and it's Michael Goff and John Martin.
Yeah, dude.
And me, and I'm like, whoa. I had to really
those guys
pinch myself
great.
Because I don't think they know. Some of us younger generation guys are in awe of these people,
Yeah, no, John's incredible.
So that's cool you got to study under him.
Yeah, yeah. I still am.
When did you get to Bowling Green? Did you give a year?
It would have been right after high school.
Okay. Year was that?
I graduated in 2016.
Okay.
I spent that summer at home, came down here in August of 2016.
Okay.
And, I've gone home to visit less and less frequency because now I live in a house and shit. I don't live on campus anymore.
Right.
I've got this band. I've got a girlfriend. I've got a job. A few different jobs.
You've settled.
Yeah, exactly. This is kind of my new home, so I don't go back so much
anymore.
It is
your home. You have a house.
Yeah, exactly, right.
So you've been in Bowling Green for 3 years.
3 years.
And the music of this town brought you here.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
That is a pretty fascinating thing to hear.
Yeah,
because I'm born and raised here, so I've never really heard that story from someone before.
Yeah, no, some people think it's funny, that I had heard about certain bands that my buddy Spencer Woods, who plays in plays piano in my band.
Yeah.
He thought it was funny talking to me about some of this stuff because there's bands that he's never heard of that are from Bowling Green that I was talking about when I moved down here that I liked them and stuff. I was just like a fucking dork, basically, and just went on the internet and looked up Bowling Green bands.
Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with it. It goes to show what this music scene truly consists
of. And it was really special to me, you know, especially, like I said, like with Tiger. And I'm not the only person. I was talking to Joseph Jones. And he was saying, you know, at Tiger's funeral, they met people who also moved from far away just to be closer to that dude in different cities that he lived in.
Yeah, because I know he had a connection to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's where he's from.
But, you know, Bowling Green and Chicago have always had a long history. This used to be called Little Chicago.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's like it's a weird story. You have to look it up or Google it or something. But Bowling Green back in the day, like in the 40s and 50s, was known as Little Chicago.
Weird.
And my mother's parents came from Chicago to here. Like, they were from Kentucky, but then they moved to Chicago and they came back and started a family. And so there's a lot of stories about a lot of people connected to Chicago and Bowling Green for some reason.
Interesting.
I know, I've always thought that was a little weird myself. Yeah. I think a lot of the mafia people came here to hide.
That makes sense. Now, dude, there's some places around here where I'm almost certain it's like mafia friends.
I've met a lot of people, though, that have Chicago family or connections, because I do, too. So it's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a Cubs hat right
now. Yeah,
yeah, you
got a Chicago hat right here. Yeah.
But anyway, you end up here in 2016.
Yeah.
And you're going to Western, right?
Yep.
And what was your introduction into this music scene? Aside from hearing music from here, when you moved here, who were the first people you saw live? Like, what did you get into?
I came here for what they call Master Plan at WKU. It's like the freshmen get to have a week to, like, kind of figure out where everything is before the complete madness of a semester starts. I'm thankful I did that because I would have been way in over my head if I had.
They have tour guides now for that
stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was lame and cliche, but it, you know, I met my girlfriend of 3 years, actually.
That's awesome.
Through there. We've basically been together the whole time I've been here.
Well, that's fantastic.
It's not really what we
didn't
were planning.
That.
Yeah, no, it was like...
I was just looking for my class, and I found my
soulmate. I don't want to get too deep into the grossness of everything that went down, but it wasn't supposed to be the way that it is, and I'm thankful for it, you know.
Hey, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, I guess so. But so, yeah, I came down here, and during the Master Plan week, before I had met any of the people who are now my close friends, well, actually, that's not true. I met a few. Some of the people in the guitar department, like Sarah Hot Donna.
Mm-hmm.
She's a very, very good guitar player who's in the WKU guitar player or guitar program with me. I met her, and she said there was a house show going on, and it was at the Foya House.
Yeah.
And regardless of, you know, opinions on, like, the Foya House and any of that stuff, we went, and it was fun. It was cool because it was, to me, it was like...
Dude, fuck those opinions. Foya House is awesome. And it's very missed. They need to come back.
So where I'm from... we didn't have, like, house shows or anything.
Right.
Like I told you, I was the music scene.
Right.
Because if I wanted to go to a show, I had to drive hours away to a big city. So, to me, like, in my first week of being here, going to a house show, it was like, wow, this is cool that this happens.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell this is a town where there's not really shit to do, but the people here made cool shit to do. And,
you definitely can
made
find
something
it.
Cool out of it. Which is what's really impressive, I think. I think it's part of the reason that we have such good music here is that people... care
well,
about
we had Foya,
creating
we also
culture.
Had the Sinkhole Sanctuary.
Yeah, the Sinkhole
and the Manor.
Is my
I don't know
favorite.
If you were here when the Manor.
No,
was
the Manor
there.
Had burned down by the time I got here, but I heard all the stories about it. And
but
everything.
This town's always been known to not. There's always been something.
Yeah.
You know, like house shows and
But
like
the Gnome Home is actually that's Spencer Woods' house.
Yeah.
He doesn't have shows there anymore because the floor almost collapsed and the cops came. But
that'll do it.
But that's where we have band practices in the Gnome Home.
That's cool.
But
years ago there was a place on Kentucky Street called the Gallery, which wasn't too far from where Foya House is now.
Yeah.
It was. And that was also known. And that was back in the, you know, late 90s and stuff. But yeah, this town's always been known for that stuff.
Yeah, and I can't remember who all played at the first house.
That was my question.
To.
That was my
there
next
was,
question is who
I
played?
Believe oh man, I'm
sure Toby played,
I
want
to say...
Or did he
no,
just host
Toby
it?
Didn't play. He just hosted it. I think Chuck Falcon
Excellent.
Was playing there, which was pretty cool.
Probably would have been the Pretty Okays at that point.
I don't think it was the Pretty Okays. I think it was just...
Still
was
the Black Shades or just him by himself? Oh, wait, no, he told me this one.
It was just a solo type situation.
It was Chuck Falcon and the Machines.
And the Machines, and he had the
memory,
the MIDI stuff set up.
Yep.
And some out-of-town group where they were playing, like, a banjo that was plugged into a distortion pedal.
Love
and
it.
All this crazy shit. It was cool. It was this weird punk group. And so I really enjoyed it, and I ended up going outside to smoke a cigarette. I smoked cigarettes at the time. And I met Anthony Joyner from Astronomy Club, who lived right next door to the Foya House. And he was talking to me about music and stuff. And he was like, hey, well, you want to come over and jam? And I was like, sure, cool, you know? And so I go over, and I jammed with him, and I think it was... Dylan Graves, Anthony, Sarah Benio, basically all the Astronomy Club people. Mm-hmm. We had a little jam. I think I played bass, even though I'm not a bass player. And I was like, yeah, I'll play bass. And someone was like, yeah, you're a really good bass player. And I was like, thanks. I don't even really play bass. Like, I'd rather play one of these other instruments. And I didn't go over there too many times. But that was kind of my first exposure into being able to jam with people.
That's
and stuff.
Great.
And it was a lot of fun. And, you know, like I said, I don't really keep in touch with those folks too much anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was
still a good introduction.
Yeah,
to getting
for sure.
Here because,
and it was,
you know, Foya House no longer.
Yeah,
is
and just
there.
Having
I
an
mean,
open jam with some people was really kind of the thing I needed. And so the next week, class started, and I met Colton Turley and Spencer Woods through WKU. And Colton always tells a really mean version of this story, so I would like to set the record straight to if anyone.
Well, this is your podcast,
says,
so you do whatever.
He
you
says
do.
Some pretty upsetting shit about this, but it's not the way it went down. So we were in music theory one, first day of class, and we had to do this fucking icebreaker exercise. And I see Colton, and I always thought he was much much older than me, but he's only a year older than me. Because he's got that big beard, and he's fucking huge, you know? And I thought he was at least 25, 26 years old. He's, at the time, he was like 19. You know, I thought he was old. So I'm looking at him, and I notice he's got like a lisp, you know, because he does. It's
so
fine.
Do I.
He's one of my best friends. I can say that about him. He's got
okay.
a lisp. He totally does. But
embrace it.
So my first thought is like, okay, this guy's really old, and he's still in freshman level music theory.
Right.
He's got a lisp. Maybe he's a little on the slow side. Cool, it's whatever, you know, it's fine. Like, I'll, you know, but he gets paired up with me for this icebreaker. So our thing was we had to shake each other's hands and say our names. So I shake his hand, we say our names. I'm like, cool. I'm like, okay, I'll probably never see that guy again, but it's whatever, you know, seemed like an okay guy, just a little on the slow side. Colton is way more crass when he talks about what I must have thought
how of. This happened.
Yeah, so fast forward 2 days, it's Wednesday. I go to Jazz Ensemble, WKU Jazz Band, and Colton was there before anybody else. There was nobody there. I walked in, and it was just Colton, and he's sitting in a chair with his bass, and he's just like just shredding like a motherfucker, like Primus type shit, just going
awesome.
Crazy. And I was like, oh, like there's something more to this guy than I thought there was. He's actually a really good musician.
Right.
And so we play in Jazz Band. I talk to him a little bit off and on, you know, just like, hey, can I have that cable or whatever? Just, you know, small talk, playing in an ensemble shit. And Spencer Woods playing the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And we take a 5-minute break, and I go outside to smoke a cigarette, and Colton comes too, because we were the only two people in there at the time who smoked cigarettes. Spencer Woods likes to steal hits off of people's cigarettes. So he comes outside as well to try and be like, hey, can I get a little... And so that's kind of how... That was like the beginnings of is we started talking out there over cigarettes and Jazz Band.
Okay.
And we were talking about, you know, Spencer likes to play Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm a big fan of that game as well. So we were talking about that. And I was like, oh, you like to play D&D? Like, that's cool.
Nice.
You know, maybe we could do that sometime. And
so you got the D&D connection
and the
music connection. And
then he's talking about, like, yeah, I haven't had anyone over to jam in a while. Like, oh, you like to jam? You know, like, I like to jam with people and play Dungeons & Dragons. Like, this is pretty cool. So me and Spencer ended up jamming. And I think the first thing we ever jammed on, it was just a very different bare bones version of the song that we have now that's called French Fry in E minor. He was like, yeah, there's this piano lick I've been working on, and it's, you know, bun dugga dugga da bun da dugga dugga dugga. I thought it was really cool, like something I hadn't really heard something like that before. So we started working on that, and just kind of trying to like out shred each other on solos, like kind of sizing each other up musically. And that's, I think, why the song sounds the way it does, because at the end of it, we just trade improvised solos back and forth for a while, just trading twos. And that's kind of where it came from. And, you know, jammed with Colton separately and then all together. And we started working on songs, but we didn't have a drummer. So we recorded our first record with Max Erskine, who is a great friend of ours. He's fantastic. A homie. I've had some great times with Max Erskine. He's one of my best friends since I moved here.
Cool. I've never met him, but I've heard his work.
Yeah, he does great work.
Really impressive great stuff. Work. And Sis recorded her album with him, and I have that, and it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, and he's only gotten better and better over time. Yeah. Like, our record sounds good, but now he's got better equipment, more experience, you know, all this shit going on. And so we wanted to record really bad because we had 10 songs we really wanted to do, but we didn't have a drummer. So on the record, I ended up playing the drums, and we did it kind of weird. Like, they would play into my headphones, and we would record the drum tracks, which sucked because if I fucked up, we had to just completely redo the entire everything. But we did that, and I played the drums, and then we kind of layered everything else in over top, and that's what our first album is, which... still liking everything, but we couldn't play gigs was the problem, so we didn't have a drummer.
But at least you got a start.
Yeah, yeah, we started
recording
everything.
That's really the important factor of what that is.
Yeah, for sure. And so we had two people really... Well, I shouldn't say that. A bunch of people came in and jammed with us and kind of like... I wouldn't say auditioned. Right. Know, I put that in air quotes. I know you guys can't see that, but that was in air quotes when I said
he's
audition.
Audition.
Yeah, he's got my back on that one. Because it wasn't like, oh, what are your qualifications? Right. You know, it was... They just came and jammed.
You're just kind of testing out people
and while
without
we played
putting
with,
on pressure on them or anything.
Yeah, and while we had fun playing with a lot of these people... We found that when we played our songs, they couldn't really hang. Like, they couldn't really follow. Because our music's not that hard, but it is kind of on the complex side.
But it does have its own language, you know.
Yeah, it's kind of rhythmically more complex than some stuff.
Right.
And it is.
And that's not everyone can pull that off.
Yeah, which is what we learned. We learned that there were people who couldn't really hang with what we were doing.
Right.
And not to be like, oh, our music's so complex, but kind of is.
It
like,
is. It is enough. I mean, from what I've heard, it is. And it does take a special type of drummer
which
to understand
why...
that. Percussive drummers are usually better fit for such things.
Yeah.
Instead of someone that's just simple and straight to the point.
Yeah, and that's what we learned after playing with three or four people. And so then it was like, okay, well, there's two people that we really... know would do a good job.
Right.
It's Joseph Jones,
of course,
from Morning Teleportation, who
like
was in at the time like five bands.
Drummer.
Yeah, he's incredibly good. Who was in like five bands at the time. And he actually came over and jammed with us because he's a friend.
Yeah.
He's a friend of ours. And
Joseph's a good guy.
He's a great guy. Love Joseph. And he came over and jammed, but it was never. We always knew it wasn't going to be a thing where, like, he would join our band because he had so much shit to do.
But he was at least helping you out.
Yeah, he came and played with us, and it was fun, and, you know, he became, like, a homie. And the other guy that we really wanted was Jan Garza, who is... I first saw him play at WKU in the jazz band, and he's just this insanely fucking talented drummer. Mexican dude. Pointy ears like an elf, just like he was born that way. They're pointy. I remember watching him play this jazz tune. It's like a samba, like Latin jazz, doing a drum solo. And I'm just looking at him, and his eyes are just like, he's just out of this world, a whole new place. And he's just playing all this crazy shit. And we were like, well, that other guy would be good too. But Jan and Joseph, they're too good. They're not going to play with us. One day, me and Colton are up. I don't know if you've been to the Fine Arts Center at WKU.
Oh, yeah.
You know those bridges? We're sitting up on the bridges smoking cigarettes in between class, and we're like, who should be our drummer? You know, I can't forget. And we see Jan walking underneath, and we're like, we should ask Jan. We're like, hey, Jan. Like, look right down. Like, you want to join our band? He's like, okay. And he was like, when are we gigging? We were like, tomorrow at the Ryman. And he was like, all right, cool. You know,
dude,
and it was just, it was
great.
A ha 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 funny thing. You know,
right.
we weren't serious. And months went by. We're bugging him to come jam with us. And we're just thinking, it's not going to be him. We got to get someone else. Finally, he does come and jam with us. Has a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Perfect fit. Putting new, interesting things on our songs that we didn't have before. It's part of the reason why our live sound is so different from the studio is because he does like these crazy new things that we wouldn't have thought of to do. And he ended
again,
up...
Again, he's a percussive drummer.
Yeah, man.
He's able to hold down the beat.
He's got an understanding of rhythm that is
he
just...
He can do these awesome things. And,
his understanding of rhythm is beyond anything I've ever seen in a person. Like, he'll come to band practice. Spoiler alert, like, he became our drummer. He stayed. And now we've got him, which was incredible, you know? he'll come to practice and he'll get on the drum kit and he'll be like, so I've been working on this new thing where it's like the kick drum is in 5 and the hi-hat is in 7 and the snare drum is in 3, but it's all in 4. And he'll be like, check this out. And he'll be like, and he'll be like, you understand? I'll be like, I have no fucking idea what you're talking about, but it's cool, you know?
Keep playing it and we'll come up with something.
Yeah, yeah. So he just really, he gets rhythm. I mean, we've had a lot of experiences together. Where we end up just talking philosophically about music and rhythm and stuff. And at one point, he was talking about rhythm, and he was like, dude, it's just sand. And I was, that shit blew my mind completely. I mean, I was under some influences at the time I don't want to get into, but it was crazy. He was talking about how, you know, you can be like on a beat, in front of a beat, or behind a beat.
Yep.
But there's also varying degrees of where you can do that. And it's not just like rocks. It's a wave over the rocks. It's like a really fluid thing.
Well, but you started out on drumming, so you probably understand that. I mean,
to a certain degree, I can play drums. I can't play the way that he does.
Right, he goes another
beyond. Room. He's, you know,
you should
super
read
into
Mickey
it.
Hart's book, Planet Drum.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I've listened to
that
a few.
That changed my life.
I actually saw Mickey Hart live when I was like 2 years old. It's pretty funny. My parents took me to a Mickey Hart concert
when
I was a baby.
Yeah, I saw Planet Drum twice live, but that wasn't two.
That's kind of how everything formed. And
if you ever read that book, though, I think even as a musician, you know, a non-drummer of a band, like, you still kind of come away with something new out of that. Like, he really puts it in perspective of the meaning of it.
That's cool.
The meaning of rhythm, not just drumsticks on drum kit. You know, like, he gets so deep into rhythm.
Yeah.
Like, that shit will blow your mind.
Yeah, I know. That's what Jan does for me all the time. Yeah. Just because he really, really understands it to an incredible level.
He may understand that book without even having read it.
Yeah, he probably could have written it, honestly. I mean,
what year was this? 2017?
Yeah, so 2018? our first year that I was here, it was just the three of us.
All right.
And we recorded the record. Right. And shortly after that record was recorded, this would have been late 2017, early 2018.
And where did the name come from?
Yeah, so
people, you have to tell that story.
Yeah. People, I think it's funny because it sounds like such a serious, like, the Rift, like, dark name.
Yeah, I think if people mishear it, they think it's a riff.
Well, that's actually funny that you say that, because so the reason we named our band The Rift is can basically be surmised as like Spencer's from France originally.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you know that.
No.
He's got a very hardcore accent.
I've seen you guys play, but I didn't talk to any of you, you know?
He's from France, and he's got a really crazy accent. It's really intense.
Right.
And he says some words wrong. So we would be playing together. He'd be like, yeah, I came up with this cool riff the other day. Listen to this. And he'll play something. I'd be like, buddy, like, eventually I was like, man, I think you've been trying to say riff this whole time.
That's
and he'll be
great.
Like, oh, so it's not like a guitar riff or a piano riff. He's like, no, it's a, you know, it's a riff. And we were like, wouldn't it be funny if we called our band that? So that's
great.
That just happened.
Well, I mean, I was hoping there'd be a story to it, but that's fantastic.
Yeah,
we named
a lot of things. Like, the whole name of the band, the name of most of the songs in the album, we named so sporadically. Like, in situations where we were, like we did French Fry in E minor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And we were playing it a bunch, and, you know, I'm saving a cell phone recording of it in my phone to just hold on to for next time.
Right.
And like, what do I call this recording? And Spencer was like, call it French Fry. And I was like, that's pretty funny. That won't actually be the name of the song, but I'll type that in now, and I'll put in E minor so we remember the key. And then it 3 years later, we're like, okay, we're going to play French Fry in E minor. Yeah. And blah, blah. So it's you got to be careful what you want, I guess.
Well, that's a good story, man. That is really cool. Spencer comes up with the name for the band.
Kind of accidentally.
By accident.
Yeah.
So, again, go through who is in The Rift.
Yeah, so, well, I am. I play guitar and I sing.
Yes.
We've got Spencer Woods, who plays piano. He's been playing some synthesizer stuff as well.
Cool.
And a Rhodes, which is cool.
Nice.
Yeah, at Mayhem, we're going to debut the Rhodes. He's got three keyboards set up. Awesome. And he also does some singing on, I think, two songs on the first album.
Okay.
And he's going to do quite a few more on our new record we're recording this summer. And Colton Turley plays the bass.
Mm-hmm.
He does some synth stuff sometimes, too, but live setting, it's normally just bass. And then Jan Garza plays the drums.
And that was in 2018, correct?
Yeah, Jan joined shortly after we finished our first record, which would have been late 2017, early 2018.
Okay. And I saw you guys, that would have been in the fall of 2018, because I saw you at the Sinkhole Sanctuary.
Were we dressed as Mario characters?
I think so.
Or were we dressed as
Kesha? It was a Halloween show.
Yeah, we've done, I think, three Halloween shows there.
Well, it was this past one.
Oh, this last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were dressed as Kesha. We had the wigs.
That's right.
And the trash bag dresses and the
makeup.
There
were so many people there.
That was a blast. That was such a fun show.
But that was my introduction to you guys.
Yeah.
And obviously at that point, like you're saying, you hadn't really been a band for that long.
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, we kind of, you know, we've only been together for 2 years.
Right.
And as we are now.
Right.
I mean, if you consider what me and Colton and Spencer were doing, being a band.
Oh, that totally counts.
Then that would be
kind of
3 years. That'd be 3 years.
That was the beginning time. So, yeah, you've been, I mean. But
we've only been gigging for two.
Right.
You know, and we take every gig we can. It gets hectic balancing going to school full time and.
Well, of course.
Working and doing that.
I mean, I've seen a lot of guys juggle that, but the ones that really want it.
Yeah, and that's what we do.
They make
I mean,
it happen.
We play every gig we possibly can. We've played some weird gigs, man. Like, just weird. Like I told you earlier about that one at 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a talent show.
Yeah.
Which was really weird.
But you guys were there, and I think Solar Disco Force was
there. It was a weird day, man, but it was fun. And we always like to play.
Again, our town's known for having sporadic stuff just pop up.
Absolutely.
Like, I was on campus yesterday as we're taping this. Was Earth Day, and there was some music going on.
Yeah, we played at that.
Oh, did you?
We played, check this out. This was by far.
If I'd known that, I would have come.
This was by far the weirdest shit we've ever done. So, we're thinking Earth Day is going to be outside, like it always is.
Yeah, on the Earth.
Yeah, and they're like, no, we're going to put you guys inside, you're going to be in DSU.
What the hell?
In this conference hall, right? And we're like, weird, but whatever. And so, our time slot was at 10 a.m., which is the weirdest time of day you could possibly play, like a rock and roll show. We did an acoustic setup.
Right.
So we didn't have, you know, a drum set. Jan plays a cajon, like those boxes that you smack. And then I played an electric classical guitar. It's a Godin that John Martin actually lent me.
Very nice.
And Colton played double bass. Spencer played melodica.
Okay.
So our acoustic setup we like to do.
That's neat.
So we set that all up. And we get there, and there's literally nobody there at all. And I wish
they're in class.
I can't even say I can't even say it's because nobody likes us, because it was 10 in the morning. Like, no one wants to go see anybody at 10 in the morning.
Yeah, that is kind of strange. So, I would think it would at least be afternoon or something.
Yeah, and also the Earth Day people, who were nothing but kind to us, you know, and we do appreciate them giving us that opportunity.
Right.
What of an opportunity there was. They didn't make any announcement or anything. They had no association with what we were doing whatsoever. So we got in there. We set up all the equipment ourselves, all the PA and everything that was in there, all of our equipment. And they just – one girl comes in from Earth Day, and she's just like, hey, guys, like, you got, you know, however much time left. And then leaves, and there's no one. It's this whole auditorium completely empty. I think Sarah Schulte came, and maybe two or three other people came. But the spot that it's in, it's across from the Starbucks in DSU. So you can see people.
That's actually a nice
getting their
stage,
coffee
and
stuff. So we're playing in there, and we basically just treated it as a rehearsal. You know, we played a couple songs, but mostly we were just
good to rehearse in such a nice performance.
Yeah, I guess so. And so I would just say shit, like I started being like, "Hey, all you people at Starbucks and Chick-fil-A, get in here," and stuff like that. And I said a bunch of stuff I probably shouldn't have, like just silly shit. We started doing like basically half-baked stand-up acts. Like we would all just go up to a microphone, and as we were tearing down, we were just kind of pissed off because everything about it was ridiculous. So we just said stuff. I was like, ladies and gentlemen, today's WKU Earth Day events will be broadcast live at Brazzers.com and like stuff like that. Just really dumb stuff. And
the Earth Day festivities.
So that was definitely...
Inside.
definitely the weirdest shit we've ever done. No one came. We had a couple people who would walk by on their way to Starbucks and be like, kind of look at us.
Yeah.
But that was all, you know. No one cared. So that was the weirdest thing we've ever done.
Well, what have you done cool-wise? Where have you played around town? You said Rockies, right?
Yeah, we love Rockies. We love Tidballs. We played the A-Frame. Mm-hmm. We love the Sinkhole. I love a good house show.
I do, too. I've been there a few times, but I haven't played there yet. I'm hoping that changes.
We played we played this gig in Nashville a little while ago at some diner. That was a lot of fun. Mayhem, obviously, we did last year, and that's coming up. It'll be over by the time this airs.
Right,
but
as we're taping this, Mayhem is next
Friday.
Weekend.
Or this coming weekend. Yeah, it's pretty soon.
And you guys are playing Mayhem.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, man.
That shit's a blast.
That station started in 1988.
Yeah,
and it really kind of changed the music scene of this town.
Yeah, I bet.
A lot of the bands that I got to be a part of and a lot of my friends were, we couldn't pick that up unless we were in Bowling Green city limits.
Right.
So whoever had a car, you're like, hey, let's go into town.
Yeah,
you would drive around Bowling Green just so you could listen to new rock.
Absolutely.
Which is what it was at the time. And that was where we heard all this shit. They playing Sonic Youth and Beck. I mean, you wouldn't hear that stuff on normal radio.
Right.
So thank God for New Rock and Revolution 91.7.
I'm very pro Revolution.
A lot of us owe a lot of gratitude.
Oh, I certainly do, man. They've been great to us. They play our music on there.
And like you say about Sarah, which I only know her as Hot Donna.
Yeah.
She is just one of many over the course of 20-something years that have hosted a local show. They used to not have a local show. They used to just be like, if you're a local band and you want airplay, bring us your CD, and you could just walk in, and whoever's on the air would put you on the air to talk about your show that night.
Yeah, it's cool that they've got more.
Local scene, the local shots, all that stuff, that's been going on for a good solid 15 years, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think it's cool that they've started being more and more supportive of local bands
best.
And more appreciative of
They're one of the best, which I'm, you know, personally can relate to because it meant a lot to me.
Yeah, for sure. You know?
That
was
the first
too.
Time I was ever on the radio.
Yeah.
It was in 1992.
I'm trying to think if I was on the radio before that. It was probably Revolution was the first time I was on there, too.
My band was playing at Night Class, which is where the bookstore is now.
Uh-huh.
And we walked across South Lawn to go to the radio station, which at that point was in the old academic complex.
Okay.
So we went on the air and promoted the show and then walked back over to Night Class and an hour later played, and people actually heard it.
Yeah.
And they heard our song, and they heard the interview, and they came.
Yeah, no,
it was
cool.
Like, I was 15.
Yeah.
It was like life-changing stuff.
Absolutely. It's cool how that stuff works, man. People really do listen to that shit on there. That's why I'm really thankful for
people
them.
People that know.
Playing us.
Know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the music people.
Yeah, absolutely.
They get it.
I'm really thankful for it.
And, yeah.
We actually just recently did an interview with them about our new record that we're working on.
So what is in store for you guys as far as as we're taping this? It's 2019, spring of 2019.
Yeah.
Obviously,
April.
As much as we've talked about, it is April of 2019. So you've got a big show coming up, and that's great because, again, Revolution has done a phenomenal job of hosting the concerts that they do, and Mayhem is definitely their big one.
It's a blast.
But you guys are recording an album as a band now, as a four-piece, correct? What's your plans for that, and what's on the future horizon for you?
So we've got a bunch of shows going on the next 2 months. It just keeps kind of booking up. People keep asking us to do stuff, and you know, we're trying to make our money and play.
I'm assuming when school gets out in a month from this point, you guys think you'll have a busy summer?
Oh, yeah, man.
Is that the plan?
We're planning on doing a little tour in May, like 3 or 4 dates, Lexington, Nashville, maybe Louisville. So we've got that going on, and we are going to start recording, I think, next month with Max again.
Okay.
And we're still in the midst of getting some of the stuff finished up, but we know all the songs we're going to put on, and it's going to have, I think, 15 or 16 songs.
Wow.
They're all much shorter.
Yeah, but that's a record, man. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a full blown.
Well, we did 10
to listen to.
We did 10 on the first one.
Yeah,
and I like those songs and everything, but they're all pretty long. And even though there's quite a bit of variety, I think there's kind of one feel where this new stuff we're working on is just kind of way out of the box of what we were doing before. Right. Especially Jan kind of changed.
Grown, yeah, you've grown and changed a little Absolutely. Bit with the addition of him. And
so we're doing some pretty out there stuff that I'm looking forward to. I think the people who really like the first album are going to have to make some adjustments. If they're going to like the new one.
It's growth. I mean, people that understand music should understand that
yeah,
you can't
and I don't
re-record
care.
The same record
yeah.
over and over.
I mean, if I cared about, you know, making money and people liking me, yeah. I wouldn't be a musician.
Exactly.
Like, I just wouldn't.
I'd be an actor.
Or something. Maybe like a fucking accountant or something.
Yes, but accountants are very loved by
they're,
people.
They're, you know, it's they can make that money. People will be like, ah, yes, you've got a job. That's, yeah, there you go. I would do something other than the most self-deprecating career in the universe.
I can relate.
But, you know, I don't care about those things. So we're doing some weirder stuff. We're going to put some electronic textures kind of like in the vein of like Gorillaz or Flaming Lips kind of stuff. And all the rhythm stuff has gotten pretty wild. We've got these weird time signatures we're using because of Jan and his understanding of drums and... just some more interesting and shorter and sweeter kind of, you know, and we're doing like no stops in between the songs.
Oh, just going
almost.
Right
yeah. There's going to be maybe some transitional stuff and little breaks, but I want the record just be like, bam, 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 bam. You know, these short songs where it's like, you don't like that? Fuck you. Here's another one. Like da, 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 medley type stuff too. So we're going to start that next month and hopefully finish it up in June. I'd like to put it out by, you know, fall or winter.
Okay.
But it just depends on, you know, it'll
so
be done
at some
when
point,
done.
Though, before the end of 2019,
oh,
you'll
yeah,
have
it'll
a new
be
record
this year.
Out.
It'll be this year.
And then that will catapult you into 2020, and
yep,
you've got
well,
something to
God knows what
go
we're doing
to.
Then.
Yeah.
I think we've been talking about doing this rock opera EP for a while that I think we might do called Dynamite Laser Dragon Attack. And it's we've written some songs for it, and it tells
That's
this science fiction story of a dynamite laser dragon who, as you can imagine, is a dragon who can shoot dynamite and lasers out of its mouth and eyes. And it's about his trials and tribulations. We have a few. We've actually written some songs about this fucking dragon, and we haven't put the whole thing together yet, but we want to make it. It's very elaborate sounding stuff. We've got like a love song and a rap song and all this stuff about this
song.
Dragon.
That's cool.
It's whatever you want to think it is, but it's no, we're
I
gonna.
Mean, I get it.
We
I,
like it, and I think that's what we're gonna do after album two.
That's what it's
two.
About, though.
Oh, for
you,
sure.
You guys are doing what you want to do. You're not doing it because someone tells you.
No
you
one,
should,
no
you
one in their right mind would tell us you guys should do
Nobody
a concept album about a dynamite laser dragon, his life and death. And
I like
so
it.
That's I think maybe in the future for us after album number two.
Great.
And then God knows what's going to happen.
Well, at least you've got
the world
goals.
Might be over by then. Matter. I don't know.
Always good to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're staying busy for sure.
Yeah. So you do have the one record.
Absolutely.
Is it just available online? Do you have
no,
hard
we
copies?
No, you can buy your CDs right here at
right
Mellow
here at
Mats,
Mellow
Music
Mats.
And more. You can also buy them from us directly on our website, theRift420.bandcamp.com.
I was going to... You're good at this. I don't even barely have to ask any questions. You answer.
Oh, yeah.
That was my next question.
Yeah, got to get that paper, dude.
You got to let people know where to find your stuff.
It's
but obviously, if people Google your name, you're in the normal
Yeah, we're
places
on Spotify,
where
Apple Music. The record's called Wasteland Flaming Sun. 10 tracks. The artwork is awesome. I don't know how much you've gotten to look at that.
I've only seen it online. I need to buy it before I leave here.
Yeah, go for it, man. That's money goes right back in my pocket.
Exactly.
So, what was I going to say?
I don't know.
Oh, the artwork is great. Spencer and I, when we were... I briefly mentioned that we studied jazz in Florence, Italy, for a summer.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, it was awesome, you know. It was hard work. It was, at some times, like, soul-shattering, like, level of fucking effort I had to put into that. Because I like jazz well enough, and I can play it okay, but I pretty much suck at playing jazz. And I don't like it enough to put in all the time to get that good.
Right.
So when we were there, it was nonstop. It was just, I'm constantly practicing, constantly working on stuff, you know. we were playing gigs. It wasn't like student, like, oh, these are a bunch of college students who are playing a gig for this, you know, institution. It was like, no, we signed you up to play at this club. Like, go do it. And so we were doing that shit, and it was fun. It was a blast. And, you know, I wasn't 21 at the time, but the drinking age there is 18. Yeah. So we were partying. And there was one night me and Spencer decided we were going to go out to this nightclub that we had heard about, right? So we go, we're walking around these streets of Florence at night trying to find this nightclub. And we see the building it's supposed to be at, but it's like closed and there's no one there. And we're like, well, what the fuck? But we hear live music coming from somewhere down the block. And we're like, let's go check that shit out, you know? So we go over and it's this pub called the Super Fox. And there's this Irish guy and this American guy, Derek, and Derek's the American guy, and Aaron. Yeah, Aaron's the Irish dude. They're playing like covers and stuff, acoustic guitar and cajon. It was cool. It was fun, you know, and listened to music and we drank a few beers. And after it was over, I went over and I was talking to them, like, you know, good set, you guys. It sounded really good. And I go, thanks. And we started kind of hanging out with those guys and drinking. And there's all this, these paintings all along the walls of the Super Fox. These impressionist paintings, they're all really good. I was like, who does these paintings? They're all really awesome. They're like, oh, that's this guy over here. And he points to his friend, David Cassar. He's an Italian guy. He's like, yeah, those are my paintings, you know. And we start really hitting it off with these guys. Like, we instantly kind of become friends. They're like, hey, do you want to come to this nightclub with us? So we go to this cool, like, secret nightclub called The Blob. And it's, like, legally not supposed to exist. It's not on, like, Google Maps and stuff. It's, like, registered as an apartment building. But they take us to the secret nightclub. And we just partied our asses off there. And we hung out with these guys for a while, you know what I mean, over the whole month that we were there.
Right.
And it was great. It was awesome. Those guys are cool. But we talked to David about, you know, have you ever painted something to music before? He said he'd never tried that sort of thing, but he'd be open to it. So when we recorded our record after we got back, we sent it to him and we were like, hey, you know, if anything comes to your mind while you're listening to this, if you want to paint it, we can try and use that as our work. And that ended up being what he painted as the front and back cover of that.
That's awesome.
Which is amazing work that he did. And
good.
I like it a lot. And I think the next record we're going to go local with our artist.
Right.
Because I think that's important. But he's going to...
Buy local. Shop local.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, instead of going all the way across the ocean.
There are plenty of talented artists here.
Absolutely. I'm dating a very talented
artist. That's a cool story.
Yeah, it was a blast.
So anyone that doesn't own the record needs to get it, and now they know and understand the meaning behind the
artwork.
Yeah,
the artwork's great.
That's fantastic.
I have the front cover painting on my wall in my house, like the original.
Very
and Spencer
cool.
has the back cover of the dude in the desert with the guitar.
That's
I don't
awesome.
Know if you've seen that, but it's on his wall in his basement, his house. So we got to keep him and everything. And
that's great.
I think we're going to have him paint something and see how well we like it.
Yeah.
If, you know, if it's way better than any of the local stuff we get, then maybe we'll do it. But we're going to have a bunch more different artists paint stuff and see what we're going to use.
You guys are definitely on the right path as far as
the mixture
of art and music. And, I mean, you're very original, you know.
Well, thank you.
I mean, that's for sure.
Appreciate that.
I mean, like, again, like, that was the first introduction of me even hearing about you guys, was being at that show.
Right.
I was there to see some other bands, you know. I didn't know who you all were.
Yeah.
And I didn't,
we were going hard that night, man. We were so...
Well, I mean, again, it was the first time.
Yeah,
of hearing
the
name, seeing you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like, you kind of just, that first time, it doesn't always sink in until a day or two later when you have left, you know. And it's
yeah.
like, man, that band was pretty good.
Right,
but I was there
that.
To see the cartoons and, you know,
yeah,
all these
we
other
love
things.
The cartoons.
They
we
did
play
Cemetery
with them.
Man. That was great.
Yeah, that we saw them debut Cemetery Man, I think. We played with them a million times, man.
Yeah.
Oh, we love the cartoons. We love Full Frontal Saurus.
I was going to say, what is around here locally that you're a fan of?
Oh, man. Well, obviously, I've talked about how much I love Morning Telly, and that's sadly not going to be a thing anymore.
Yeah, that's, again, as we're taping
tragedy,
this, that just happened.
Yeah. But I love Full Frontal Saurus. Their new album just came out a month or two ago. It's great.
Fantastic.
Spirit Week, I'm a big fan of. Mm-hmm. I think they're excellent.
I'm assuming that's what Joseph will do full-time now.
I suppose. He's got some stuff
because he's
on.
Always been
I think
really...
York I don't know if York is still a thing anymore, but I liked them a lot. They played with us
he's
a few times.
He's always really big on promotion of Spirit Week
yeah
stuff,
and
so
they're great. I like
them. Yeah, they seem to be pretty active.
Yeah, A lot of bands that I really liked have broken up. Like, I really liked the Ghost Effects and, oh gosh, Porch Lord.
Yeah.
But as far as people who are still around, Cloud Ruler. Mm. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with
them.
They're
a very cool kind of groove metal duo playing around here.
Right.
They're excellent. Richard, their singer, guitar player, plays a baritone guitar.
That's cool.
Super, super heavy and badass. Colton's recording their demo right now at our house. So those guys are definitely up there for me.
That's awesome.
But yeah, man, there's all kinds of
people. I know that you guys have played shows with them, right?
No, we haven't played with them before. Oh, you haven't? I did listen to their new music that just came out. I don't know
either.
The Raft.
Maybe.
We always joke that we're going to start a The Rift cover band and call it The Raft.
No, there was somebody else that the other day was talking about People Proof. Oh, I guess it was Sarah. Sis.
Yeah.
She was talking about him. She's the one that did a show with him recently.
Yeah, I like her music too. That record sounds great that he just recorded. Waco Bell. I love Waco Bell. Mm-hmm.
In touch with what's happening. Like, now.
Well, I try because you're to part support of that, people. And
you're part of that group, you know, peer-wise, sort of. Age-wise. You guys are all in the same boat.
Yeah, and we try to support each other, I like to think. Mm-hmm. I certainly do, and listen to their music and stuff.
Man, I go out a lot, and I see a lot of the younger bands, you know, that my introduction to them is seeing them on stage at Ted Ball's opening for somebody. And I walk out of there every time saying, our music scene is going to be just fine.
Yeah,
it's gone through these periods of like things change, tides change, bands break up.
Happen, you know?
It does, but sometimes it happens like a lot.
Yeah.
Like four bands break up and then you have the tragedy of what we've just had.
Yeah, just recently it's probably been the roughest.
It's been pretty rough, but then you see these up and coming bands and you're like, we're okay. We're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to keep changing forever and then eventually, you know, the sun's going to explode. Like, it's just...
That's true.
The world's just going to keep changing, man. It's never done anything else. And so I'm not the kind of guy who thinks like, oh, man, our scene our scene's dying.
As a local, a lifetime local, I've seen it go through a lot of changes. Yeah.
One thing I will say that bothers me is that there's way fewer house show venues than there used to be.
Yeah.
I wish that there was still more. Because, like, you know, right. Jared stopped doing the Nightmare House. He's just doing it for recordings now. Which is cool. I get he wants to do what he wants to do. But Sinkhole is great. And they barely do anything anymore.
It's a neighborhood thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
You've got to understand. I would easily put myself in the neighbor's shoes, you know? I mean, that's got to be rough.
Absolutely,
but, I mean, house shows used to go over well on campus with all the apartments.
Yeah.
Because everybody was a kid. And they didn't care if the neighbor was having a live band or not because they were going to go.
Yeah, I just think we need more people who are willing to shoulder that risk of like, well, I hope we don't get in trouble.
It's a risk, and it's a money thing, you know, especially if you're renting
People don't want their shit to get stolen,
exactly.
too.
You
know?
Can't
so
risk
you be
having
careful.
Things get stolen or broken.
Yeah, got to have a system.
Especially if you're renting. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Someone's got to make that sacrifice. Yeah. It's not going to be me.
It's not going to be me.
But they should do it. I mean, if I had a place that was capable of doing that sort of thing, it would. But I live like right off Scottsville Road.
Yeah.
Piggies would be knocking at my door and meet as soon as that starts. Like, there's, you know.
It happens.
Coppers aren't letting me have that show, so.
But I agree with you on that. I've seen some good house shows.
I think more house shows would be fun because there's so much fun to play.
Yeah.
They're all ages, which is great. There's not enough all ages venues.
But they're also very kind of tight-lipped about word getting out to too many people.
Mm-hmm.
They do keep it in check.
Yeah.
When they have them, so you gotta give them
props
for that.
You just gotta know where to go and.
Right. It's more of who you know in the know thing.
Absolutely.
The musician connection.
And that's the thing is, I truly believe that like. The people who need to find things will find those things if they look, you know, especially like, you know, teenagers who can't go to Tidballs.
Right.
I know people talk to us on Instagram and stuff. I have teenagers send me messages on there like, man, I love your band and stuff. Like, I listen to you guys, you know, at school in the parking lot and all this shit. Like, you know, I wish I could come see you guys play. And it just makes me feel bad because we played all these venues that are 21 and up.
Yep.
You know, that's why Mayhem is such a cool thing.
Right.
It's all ages. And
that's
why it has such
a good turnout. And I think that's why Matt's always does good when they have bands here because
anyone can go.
Kids can come in and see these bands that they normally wouldn't get.
So I think more opportunities for all ages shows would be would be good. But I, like I said, I don't think the scene is going anywhere. I think it's thriving in its own way.
It's doing great. It's probably in one of the better states I've ever seen it in the 30 years I've been doing this stuff. You know, it's amazing right now. Yeah. And the amount of variety blows me away. Like, going to Live on the Lot recently was awesome.
Yeah.
The variety of the bands, the music, and the age differences was just one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Yeah, I ended up missing Live on the Lot. I would like to have gone, but I had way too much going on with work and everything.
I was there on Saturday, the Saturday night show, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet. I heard they did that nice little tribute.
They did.
Which is really awesome.
Yeah, fantastic tribute to Jeremy and Billy and Tiger and Dylan. And, I mean, but that whole weekend, again, like the music scene, if you weren't playing, they were there. Like, a few, like you missed it, but I was there even though I wasn't technically going to play.
Yeah.
I ended up playing anyway. But, I mean, it really goes to show a lot about what you
people
care
about
each other.
The place
you moved to,
you know, people really do here.
But you saw this music scene from the outside, and it brought you here, and that is just a phenomenal thing to hear.
Yeah,
I've never heard that before.
Well, I'm happy.
I've always heard people want to move to Los Angeles or New York or Austin or wherever it's happening.
People want to move to Nashville. Like, I'm going to move to Nashville and make... Fuck,
I did that.
Fuck Nashville, man. Yeah. I hate it there.
I moved to Nashville and I moved back.
I don't want people from Nashville are going to listen to this and start boycotting our music or whatever.
This is a Bowling Green music scene.
I hate being in Nashville, man. I hate...
It had
big
a good
city
time
living
for a while.
And the way people drive is fucking horrible.
Oh, dude, that's nothing.
People are just kind of...
You ever driven through Boston?
No, I've driven in Atlanta, though. That was pretty bad.
Atlanta's not too bad.
Nashville is terrifying, dude. Oh,
no.
My God.
You got to know the roads.
I guess you would have to know. I don't know shit about Nashville other than that it's scary to
drive.
Go
down there with me sometime. I'll show you.
Driving lesson
good
in Nashville.
Stuff Nashville.
Yeah, sounds good. No, I've had fun there. You know, there's fun stuff
to
do.
It's a good city.
If you want to spend $9 on a beer and...
you don't do that. Just go see the band.
Yeah.
And then go party somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Go back to Bowling Green and party at Rockies for super cheap.
That's the beautiful thing of being so close.
Yeah.
Well, Kai, is there anything I have left out and missed?
I think
or have we
pretty thorough
covered
in this.
Your life?
Well.
Your musical journey.
I was going to say, my whole life in an hour is kind of yeesh. But yeah, pretty much everything important about it. I think so. I think we've been pretty thorough, I think.
Again, you came to this town because the music scene kind of brought you here.
Yeah.
And now you are very much a part of it. And the Rift has been going pretty strong for at least a few years as far as an active working band.
Yeah.
You guys got the one album. You're working on another. You're playing Mayhem. You've played all the clubs with a lot of great bands, and you have been welcomed into this scene. You are now a part of this scene, and I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much. We're very thankful and very lucky that it's been as smooth of a entry as it has been.
Keep being smooth.
That's gonna be the title of our new record.
I like it.
Keep being smooth.